Pierre, happy Memorial Day.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Now, did you watch the match, the big charity event yesterday? What was your kind of takeaway from it all?
Tom Brady's not an 8 handicap.
No, he's not.
No way. Impossible. I don't care.
Simmer's a huge fanboy, though. He insists that Tom was doing that on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
that was made
not.
For team. Pierre, you're behind the scenes. Come on. You know he was told to shank it, right?
No.
Not that many times.
There's no way that ball keeps going right if you're an 8 handicap like that. Ask Kevin Haim. He's the swing doctor. He'll tell you there's no possible way he's an 8 handicap. That being said, the birdie was amazing when he hit it and got it to spin back. It's almost like the ball had magnets in it.
Yep.
Maybe it did.
Yeah.
I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
I really did. I enjoyed it very much because it shows you that you could be the best athlete in the world. Golf is hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really hard.
And you know what? As a spectacle, if that's what I tuned in at the start, Pierre, and I was like, I'll probably stick with this for a little bit. I'm not too much into exhibition golf or whatever. I was in for the entire thing, and yeah. It's that. And you talk about it all the time with your television production, going between the benches, the pulling back of the curtain to allow viewers the experience of what it's like. To be athletes, that's so important. Like, you know, with you know, the video games right now can allow people to play the games almost if they want to, but that aspect of how the athletes talk amongst themselves and how they, you know, when they're reacting to shots that are made, that's what events like yesterday, that gives us the perspective we never see any other time.
Boy, that's well said. I agree. 100% agree. That was one of the things that really hooked me, was the fact that you were going behind the scenes. You were hearing what they were going through. You were seeing their flaws as athletes. You were seeing you saw the flaws of the technical difficulties. And you got to believe TNT did everything they could to make that an unbelievable production. But because of the weather, I would imagine, because of how many moving parts there were, there were a lot of flaws in that broadcast. That being said, they did a really good job. I was really impressed. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, me too as well. Now, speaking of pulling back the curtain or whatever, and you guys at NBC have been doing lots of stuff over the years. Well, you started between the benches here in Canada, of course, with TSN. But what sorts of things can fans, what sorts of things are they talking about at the network level as far as where televising hockey may go sometime, either in the short term or the longer term?
Good question. There's a lot of moving parts in this one, too, because nobody really knows what's going to be allowed and what's not going to be allowed. You know, I was watching yesterday, and they had interviews on the course, yet there was a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit of social distancing. You saw 3 people in the tent. You wouldn't call it a booth, but the tent, and they were separated by a wall, a clear wall, so they could see one another. So I don't really know, to be honest, what's going to happen.
I meant sort of more post-COVID, Pierre, not necessarily while we're still on this. Yeah,
I would say post-COVID, you're probably going to be looking at more and more player involvement, more and more coach involvement in terms of information that could be relayed back to the viewing audience.
Could we see a point where coaches are mic'd? You know, and I know that there's a lot
that would be a dream.
Yeah.
I don't know if that will ever happen.
Right.
Do you think at some point, though, Pierre, the NHL will open up? And if it's not in-game, and I know we've had some specials when it comes to the outdoor game, but do you think, hey, there's got to every NHL team, their fan base, would love to see behind the scenes in the locker room and other things, even on practice days?
You know what? They're trying, and I think they're getting better. The LA Kings do a really good job. I don't know how many people watch their games, but the LA Kings do a real good job of having a camera in the room. There's no microphone. Columbus has done a very good job with this. On their home broadcast, having a camera inside, it's almost like a robocam in their room, but no audio yet. So I think teams are starting to warm up to that. But I'll never forget when Sam Flood and Dick Ebersol approached me in 2004 during the Stanley Cup Final in Tampa about coming to do this inside the glass situation. They asked me, what do you think about doing that? Do you think you could broadcast a game from there? I said, I know I can. But I can tell you right now, the NHL will never go for it because they just don't want anybody down there. And they said, leave that to us. And they were the ones that were really the impetus to try to create that, and it worked. But they're going to have to take their time with this because I'm not sure there's that appetite to really get that much behind the scenes, but we'll see.
Do you think now, moving it more into the short term, and so when and if hockey does come back, do you think that the NHL would be more open to experimenting with some things television-wise while in these upcoming playoffs? Because, hey, we're in uncharted waters here.
For sure. One of the things that will happen if we do come back, and I'm 99.9% sure that this will happen, is camera angles will change in terms of where cameras are, because you won't have people sitting in the stands, so you won't have fans being obstructed with their views. So I think you're going to see experimentation with camera positions. In fact, I know you will. It just comes down to where those cameras are going to be posted. But I do believe that will be one of the big things coming out of this.
Yeah, one of, and I don't know whether you can do this with hockey. You probably can't. NFL games, that camera that's above the field, that's strung from all four corners, that gets in behind the offense. Boy, I tell you what, I went on a kickoff as it follows the team that's kicked off down to the other end, and you see the guy coming back at you. I mean, that is so cool. That angle of being that eye in the sky above hockey, watching it move up and down the ice, like, it'd be totally foreign to us because we're used to the center ice camera, but I think that would be pretty cool. But obviously with pucks being flipped up in the air, I don't know if you could actually get away with that.
Well, we actually have it during the Stanley Cup playoffs. NBC does.
Right.
We use that significantly. There's another camera they want to try to deploy that's called a rabbit cam, and that would be something that would run up and down the dasher. And you would get the perspective of how fast the player's going. I don't know how well that would work, but that's something they're talking about too. But we've deployed that camera you're talking about, JR, in the playoffs before. And you can, because you can raise it. The operator of that camera, obviously it's a robotic camera, but the operator has to keep it pretty high. And there are actually rules that if the puck hits the camera on a clear out,
right,
the faceoff comes outside the blue line.
Well, go back to the World Junior. With where we're going to be at economically and just overall to continue to sell the sport, Pierre, do you think at some part as part of a partnership and explaining, hey, this is going to grow the game and make more money for the players, do you think the NHL has to get to a point where they start telling the players what to do versus asking them? Because the easy thing when you're asked is, I don't feel like doing it.
Well, I think that's a good point. The one thing I would say, though, is I think the players are really amenable to doing a lot of things. They really are. I'll speak on behalf of the players right now. The spirit of cooperation amongst the players towards TV networks in particular has been phenomenal. I can just tell you that they are willing partners. They really are. I think it comes down to the managers and the coaches and the owners more than anything else, if you really want to know the truth. They don't want a lot of they don't want their players to be sidetracked. They don't want their players to lose their focus. So I think that's one of the things that you're going to have to, one of the hurdles you're going to have to overcome. But the players have been amazingly good and strong partners in terms of trying to bring more energy to broadcast.
I personally think one thing we've learned in all of this, and this has nothing to do necessarily with sports, but just society in general, with how quickly we've had to adapt to the new reality of whether it be work from home or everything else around it, the human being is able to adapt very quickly if needed to. So I'm just wondering in terms of, as you just spoke about there with sports, well, players, you know, coming, hey, listen, just do it. Just go ahead and do it. You'll get used to it. And you may be, it may happen quicker than you think.
Yeah, no, I think that's, again, I agree. Everybody's trying to adapt here. That's one of the things that I think is really impressive about society is once it comes down to an urgent situation, people can find a way to adapt. You know, adapt and overcome is the motto of the U.S. Marine Corps, and it works pretty well. It has for a long period of time, and I think that's one of the things in society that people have really learned is to adapt and overcome. And I think you're spot on when you talk about that, JR.
All right, so the NHL Players Association over the weekend, Pierre, did sign off. All 31 team player reps voted, as we talked about with you on Friday. It ended up being 29-2. Carolina and Tampa voted against. I didn't see anything from Carolina as to why. From Tampa, it was not a health and safety thing, but Alex Killorn essentially said, look, we don't really like the format. We think for the teams that are getting essentially what turns out to be a first-round bye, as you get set for the round, you're going to be facing a team that's kind of battle-tested as much as it can be in a best of five. But he also said, look, we know there's no perfect format. So why do you think at the end of the day they would have voted against then?
The principle more than anything else. I mean, that's the principle of their team. I don't want to try to put words in their mouth, but I think more than anything else, just the principle of the matter. Again, if we don't have huge eruptions of coronavirus going on, I have to think that at some point hockey will be back. If we have major eruptions and a second, display of this, then I think we probably won't have hockey till next whatever, October, November, whenever. But no, I think at some point we'll probably have hockey back.
If you're Tampa, does this also just show how serious you are, Pierre, about, hey, you know what, we know this is our window. The trades were made. The table is set. We have to win a Stanley Cup?
Could be. I mean, again, I don't know. I don't want to put words in their mouth. They were really humiliated last spring. I was there. I did the series. I just did a show for it on the NHL network. So, I mean, I can just tell you that they were throttled last year by Columbus. They weren't just beaten. They were beaten down. And I'm sure that's playing on their minds a little bit, too.
Yeah, the what came to light, right, and you did those games, was, I guess, either more physicality from Columbus or not enough physicality from Tampa. And they went out, they made those trades, right, brought in a little more sandpaper. Do you think they have enough now?
I do. I think Tampa's actually a very good team. And I think they learned a lot from last year. I really do. Not easy, obviously, until they play. You'll never know. But I do think that they're a better team. I think they're better prepared to compete. I think they're really angry about what happened last year. And I think it'll make a difference for them. All that being said, you never know in the playoffs. If the other team's goalie gets really hot, you could be in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things, and again, many decisions to be made yet. There are many things that need to be voted on, including health and safety protocols. So this is a small first step. But one of the things that's come up as well, Pierre, it looks very much like this so-called play-in round will be best of five. Now yes. Talk has moved to that first actual round of the playoffs. I guess maybe the second round, we'll call it, would be a best of five potentially as well. What do you think teams will go for that, or do they want to go with the traditional, we're at basically the quarterfinal stage of a best of seven in that round?
I don't know, but I would say this. If you're a really good team, you'd prefer to go best of seven, I think. It just gives you a little bit more wiggle room, and usually, not always, because we saw it last year. We saw it in 2013 with the Kings doing what they had to do. But I would say that one of the things that is really important is you have a little bit of wiggle room to be able to overcome maybe an upset in a first or a second game. Because if you don't have that extra game or two games, it's a problem. It's a big problem.
If the play-in is best of five, the first round is best of five, is this also selling too? And we have to focus on, this isn't 31 teams hunkering down for 2 months, that basically 3 weeks into it, Pierre, there's 23 of the teams that'll be home, and you're really only asking the final eight to hunker down and try to win a Stanley Cup?
Yeah, no, that's something, Sean, that a lot of people are talking about in the league, and we've talked about it on this show for a long time. Being locked into that environment for that period of time, there's some players that just don't want to do it. Some of them have young families. Some of them just, they don't want to be away from their spouse. They don't want to be away from their children. I totally understand that dynamic. You know, I've been doing it for a long time. My wife has been a superhero in our house. I can tell you that right now. When the playoffs start, I'm gone for 2 months. And I really appreciate that and respect that. And I think the players, I've had some players actually reach out to me and ask me about that experience. And I said it's something that's not easy to do, but you have to have a willing partner that's going to protect you and stand up for you. And understand it. And my children have been superior through all this. I can tell you that right now in terms of their relationship with their father. And I'm really appreciative of that. But it's definitely something that's going to be discussed, I would imagine, amongst the players for sure.
One of the things we were talking about, the fact on this day in sports history, Pierre, May 25th, the 1978 Montreal Canadiens clinched their third straight Stanley Cup. Calgary won their first on this day in 1989. Pittsburgh with Mario and that incredible move through Minnesota won their first in 1991. We're talking about how used to be, not that long ago, I guess 30 years is a bit of time ago, that you were awarding Stanley Cups at the end of May. Now we're into the mid part of June. Is there any appetite in the NHL to, and I guess other than condensing the schedule, to try to finish off the Stanley Cup before, let's say, the 1st of June or the May 24th or the Memorial Day weekend if you're in the U.S.?
The first time the Stanley Cup was ever awarded after the month of May was 1992. I coached in the game. It was June 1st, Pittsburgh versus Chicago, and it was a four-game sweep. And the reason why is we had a player strike during the playoffs, believe it or not. So that's what extended the season. I don't think they'll ever go back. I do think that the league will always do it this way.
Right.
It's definitely gathered some momentum in terms of playing hockey in June. I don't know about playing in July or August. This is a unique time. But I can just tell you, I coached in the first ever game that was played in the month of June. It was June 1st, 1992. And the Pittsburgh Penguins won that game and won the Stanley Cup that night. But that was the first time that ever happened.
Does the NHL look at any window you kind of pointed to? Because summer here really doesn't start normally until kids are out of school and then ends at Labor Day. That's basically in a normal year. Don't touch that, but anything else is game?
I don't know. That's fair to ask. I don't know the answer to that. But, I think because of J.R. made a really good point before, obviously we're in a really fluid time in our lives, all of our lives. I think anything is open for discussion. I really do. And people have, again, I watched this last night just in our neighborhood. People are definitely paying attention to different rules and what may have happened 3 or 4 months ago in terms of social distancing, wearing masks, washing their hands, and stuff that I never would have fathomed, 3 or 4 months ago. And all of a sudden, that's become the norm. So I think anything's possible.
Mario, by the way, on that first Stanley Cup winning team for Pittsburgh, was the Conn Smythe Trophy winner.
Yes, he was. And he was in 92 as well.
Yeah.
There was discussion, who's going to win the Conn? I will never forget it, being on the ice in Old Chicago Stadium, and one of our players says, who do you think is going to win the Conn Smythe? This is after, we won.
Yeah.
And I said, if Lemieux doesn't win, there should be an investigation.
Now,
my goodness.
Probably because he won the year before, right? 44 points in 23 games that that first year, including that incredible goal.
Against Mini.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But what was it? I mean, we've asked you this a million times, but just, just putting Mario Lemieux out on the ice, knowing how much that one person, even at that level, could dominate the way that he could.
One of the most amazing things I ever witnessed, not just his skill level and his determination to be the best. We had a practice. I took half the team out during training camp in the 91-92 season. We had a split squad. One team went to New York to play exhibition games, and the other team went to Colorado to train at altitude. We were in Vail, and so I took the team out to Vail, and Coffey was in that group, Lemieux was in that group, Recchi was in that group, Stevens was in that group. I mean, just phenomenal, phenomenal players. And our plane, we were on a commercial flight, a U.S. Air flight at the time, not on a charter. And we landed, and we didn't really have cell phones then, so we landed late. There was a delay, and I called Scotty Bowman and Craig Patrick in New York, and they said, we're late, we're probably not going to make our ice time at the arena in Vail. And they said, the players got to get on the ice. You have to get them on the ice. So I went to Mario and I said, hey, Ace, that's his nickname. I said, Ace, we got an issue here. What are we going to do? And he says, make sure the guys eat, and I promise you we'll have a good practice. So we pull over at a fast food restaurant. I'm not kidding you. A bus load of guys, and we got some hamburgers and french fries and all that stuff. Went to Vail. Checked into the hotel, went right to the rink. The trainers were unbelievable. They did a great job getting us ready. Mario Lemieux, you can ask any player that was in that practice, never saw anything like this. He raised the level of that practice to a level that nobody had ever seen before, ever. And I'm not sure they've ever seen it again from a player. It was just crazy how good he was.
Hmm. Did he have what did he have on his hamburger?
I don't know. I didn't ask him. I was sitting in the front.
All right. There you go.
I didn't pay attention.
You just paid. That's all. All right. Good stuff. Always appreciate the time and the insight, Pierre. We'll look forward to chat with you again tomorrow morning.
Yeah,
thanks for the time.
I look forward to that as well, JR. Take care, Sean. Have a great day, everybody.